David Wolcock is a professional intuitive consultant who, since reading Richard C. Hoagland's The Monument of Mars in 1993, has intensively researched ufology, ancient civilizations, consciousness science, and new paradigms of matter and energy. He's the author of a critically acclaimed trilogy of scientific research works known as the Convergence Series, which gives definitive support to the idea that a change in matter, energy, and consciousness is now occurring on the Earth and throughout the solar system. He's the co-author of the book The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, by the way, an uncanny resemblance to Edgar Cayce, to the point where so many people actually believe that David Wolcock is indeed the reincarnated Edgar Cayce. Summary of his latest scientific work appears therein, with a breakthrough case for mass spontaneous DNA evolution on Earth is unveiled. David Wolcock, our guest tonight on Coast to Coast AM. David, welcome back. How are you?
I'm very honored to be here, George. It's nice to hear your voice.
Last time we talked was a month or so ago with Win Free on, of course, the reincarnation of Edgar Cayce. Maybe
very
a little
true.
Bit later on tonight we'll chat a little bit about that as well.
Yeah, we got the transcript of that whole show up on my website, ascension2000.com, if anybody wants to see it.
Excellent, indeed. Tell me a little bit about the work you've done into interplanetary climate change. How did you get involved with that?
Well, originally I was hired on to this seminar tour called The Time of Global Shift. And that was from Dr. Scott Manilker. He hired me as his research director. And we already knew about the fact that the sun was showing signs of change and so forth. Manilker was in touch with a man who is very, very prominent in alternative physics, but not known to the general public.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy has been harassed numerous times. In fact, I mentioned him once before because he was the guy who got a free energy device working and then the next day goes to his son's baseball game and is gone for 5 hours and comes back and all the things in his apartment are gone, the shower curtain rod, the carpets, the furniture, everything, including, of course, the machine. So this guy is not exactly public, so I'm not going to say who he is on the air, but anyway, he sent Scott this email, Dr. Manilker, and said, you got to get David to look at this article. So when I went to the article, it was called Planetophysical State of the Earth and Life, which was translated from Russian, originally written by a guy named Dr. Oleski Dmitriev.
Okay.
And Dmitriev was the first one to come out with this idea that the changes that we see on the Earth cannot be simply the result of human interference, at least in the conventional sense of pollution, because what we see on the Earth is apparently a field effect that's occurring throughout the entire solar system, and we have very tangible evidence that Dmitriev brought up all the way back in 1997. So at first what I did is just to follow along and basically try to raise awareness of Dmitriev's work because nobody knew about it. But then as time went on, I realized that he had only opened the door and it was very underdeveloped. So over the years since I first heard about this, which was at the tail end of the year 2000, I have intensively researched this subject, and especially when I got a call from Richard Hoagland earlier this year around early March, and he finally was willing to say, well, you know, even if I don't totally know about the Edgar Cayce story, and it's not our focus anyway, well, I really need you to, you know, we got to bring this interplanetary climate change model out to the public. So when he told me that he'd want to co-author an article with me, which looks like it's going to turn into a book, we haven't titled it yet, but
Good. We've
already discussed that, and it is going to happen. So that book, that concept, the idea of creating something with him was a tremendous inspiration to me, and I went totally bonkers doing research. And I've uncovered, in the course of that research, incredible information. And what makes it so poignant, George, is that it's not alternative science. One of the rules that we tried to do is say, if the Russians came up with it and that's the only source we've got, it gets thrown in the garbage can because we can't determine where they got it, because all these references are to Russian-written journals, And we don't have access to those journals. We don't know where they are. We can't read them. We can't translate them, etc. If any of this stuff is real, if this is as big and as massive and as all-encompassing as we believe it to be, then there's got to be stuff that NASA has been saying about it right in plain sight, right out there on the Internet for everybody to look at. So one of the rules was it had to be mainstream science. One of the rules was it had to be either the European Space Agency or NASA. And one of the rules was that it had to be something that you could link to on the Internet that had the full write-up so that you could actually read it for free online.
You know, David, I have always believed that the things that have been happening on this planet, the ice ages, the polar shifts, everything that has occurred might be one cyclical but can't be directly related to things that man is doing on this planet. And I think you are absolutely on top of something which should prove, I would hope, once and for all, that you can't merely blame greenhouse gases for the ills of this planet.
Oh, God, no. It certainly is not helping. I mean, let's be honest.
Well, it may speed things up a little bit.
But it's not the cause. It's not even remotely the cause, and I think if we were piloting free energy devices and not emitting any pollution whatsoever, that doesn't necessarily solve the problem.
Right.
Because the problem is happening through the whole solar system. And then you got to decide, do you want to even use the semantic term problem, or is it more that we are being led through a collective spiritual initiation in which we have to face our deepest fear about the idea of planetary and personal annihilation? And maybe that's not what it's about at all. In fact, one of the things that I wanted to bring out with your listeners tonight is that in Wiltshire, England, on Silbury Hill, there was a crop circle that showed up just last week. In fact, it was first reported on July 21st, but I only heard about it a couple days ago. And this crop circle, we've seen crop formations for thousands of years. There's reports of formations showing up like in the 1400s and so forth. And ever since the 70s, in the beginning, it was just little round circles, and that's all you saw. And then into the 80s, it got to be like two circles that had a bar between them. Then in the late 80s, things started to heat up. Then 1991 came along, and at Barbary Castle in England, there was this one incredible formation that Richard jumped on and put into his book, Monuments of Mars.
Very sophisticated.
Showing this thing that looks like a tetrahedron.
Right.
Like a three-sided, you know, this pyramid inside a sphere. And then when Richard did the analysis on it, you find out that all the angles perfectly match with this geometry of the tetrahedron inside the sphere. Now, that was back in 1991. The crops are, you can't even call them circles anymore. The crop formations have increased in complexity ever since that time. And this physics model that we're drawing off of in order to explain why this interplanetary climate change matters is a physics that gets into a non-electromagnetic energy source. It's a source that is underneath electromagnetic energy. And I want to point out something important. That is that, as you remember, George, the last time we were on, a very unfortunate thing had happened because the night that Richard and I were on with Art Bell, Eugene Maloff had passed away.
Right, was and murdered, actually.
It was a murder.
Yeah.
It was a bludgeoning murder. And I don't know if you're aware of this either, especially after, you know, if your audience has been seeing the Manchurian Candidate movie. Did you know that the guy that murdered Eugene Maloff ended up being murdered?
The guy that they suspect murdered Eugene Maloff.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, I had that on a couple weeks ago.
That's a little weird.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't been listening to the show every night, so I wasn't sure if you'd got that or not.
Well, and that was a high school basketball player who is obviously not in high school anymore.
Right.
But he was shot in a robbery attempt at a Dairy Queen or type store.
That's correct.
By the owner. And, you know, I got to tell you, though, David, and this is, of course, not a Eugene Maloff show right now, but I have my suspicions about that because I happen to think that something more substantial happened to Eugene Maloff.
It's weird. It is weird. It's weird that something happened to him, and then it's weird that the perp ended up getting killed as well.
Yep.
In such a short period of time. And we did the show that had he not died, we might have had him on as a guest.
That's
talking
right.
about free energy. Now,
For
those who don't know, and Richard made sure that I dotted my I's and crossed my T's on this before we went on the air, Eugene Malov was the head writer for all the science coming out of MIT, which is arguably one of the most prestigious universities in the world. He was the big guy. He was the guy. And what happened was he found out that these scientists who he was staking his reputation on were faking the data about cold fusion to make it look like nothing was going on when in fact something was.
And that it was unattainable, right?
Correct.
Yep.
Now he saw that there was a real, what they call over-unity effect going on. Over-unity means more energy coming out than it takes to run, which is obviously a dream come true for anybody that wants to drive a car and not pay $30 for a tank of gas.
Yeah.
You know, so then comes this show, and right before the show, of course, Richard has some connections with Washington, D.C. now, and we were going to be getting Eugene out there to actually show these congressmen right up in their face this machine that when you put your hands on it, it starts spinning faster just by your bioenergy, among other things.
It's a small machine, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And we're still trying to track that down and figure out how to get it to the right people. But the point is that, like, days before we were going to have this breakthrough happen, he disappears from the world, from his life. And it appears to be deliberate sabotage. So that's the context. And one of the things that's so important is that here we have the former head of science writing out of MIT, very mainstream guy who then had to go into the alternative when he realized the mainstream wasn't being straight up about this. And before he passed away, he had become convinced that the energy that we are dealing with is not electromagnetic, period. It is an energy that is more difficult for Western scientists to identify and understand, but there are ways in which you can measure it and understand it, and I'd like to direct your readers and listeners to etherometry.com, spelled AETHEROMETRY.com.
Now, are you saying, though, that this energy has something to do with crop formations?
I mean, in the sense that if you look at the research that was done on crop formations, one of the things we know is that these large underground deposits of water disappear when the formation shows up. So somehow you've got a device that is piping out the water from under the ground at just the right speed and intensity to stop the grass from burning while it's undergoing what appears to be some form of microwave radiation that's causing these stalks to bend without breaking.
And this microwave radiation could be coming from either above or below, right?
Right. But the point is that the microwave radiation is probably only one part of it, and the other part would be these hyperdimensional energy fields that are actually responsible for piping out the water, because the water literally has to transmute through physical space.
Well, what about the intelligence behind this, David?
I believe that we're dealing with extraterrestrial intelligence, which is of a positive and benevolent nature. I think that movies that would attempt to portray crop formations as negative or harbingers of doom are simply misled. The higher forces, as far as I understand it, from my own communications with them and some certain sources of intel that I believe are valid, they cannot interfere directly on our free will. They can't trample on our rights to not want to know.
What are they trying to tell us?
They're trying to tell us that there is a new model of physics. They have been showing diagrams of how this works. And now, as of July 21st, 2004, and hopefully I'm the first person to tell your audience this, they have put a formation down in Avebury, Wiltshire at Silbury Hill that defines the end of 2012. It actually shows you a clock that counts off the days until it happens.
Are you saying, because this is something that we've been trying to find for a very long time,
correct,
that there's a rationale now for the end date of December 21st, 2012?
Right. As of tonight, and hopefully this is the first time many of you guys have heard this.
Well, it's the first time we've heard it,
okay,
on Coast to Coast.
We have the smoking gun that makes a direct connection between crop circles and the end of the Mayan calendar, because they put it down there. And what they did is very ingenious. They set up a system. You can read about this on cropcircleconnector.com, which is a site out of England. And what it has, basically, is, first of all, you're looking at it and you see a wheel of, obviously, Mayan glyphs. There are four major points that are like in a cross shape, so equally spaced along that outer wheel. And those points are black. And if you look at those black areas more closely, they're actually divided in half. So there's two squares for each of these four points. Now, the man who decoded this discovered that the Mayan system is all based on 52 and various cycles of 52, like if you add zeros to it, you get 5,200 years, mm-hmm. 520 years, 52 years, and then on down. So then here's your wheel on the outside, and what he figured out was, just like the Mayan calendar is set up, these four major points signify these 5,200-year intervals, and then the ones inside are 520. And there's inside that wheel, there is a set of wings. They actually look like bird wings. Now, I don't know if you realize this or not, but the symbol for Ra, the Egyptian god, who also apparently is the entity that I'm in touch with now, the symbol for Ra is the winged disc, and there is a winged disc inside this wheel. So you can naturally assume why I'm so excited about this.
Now, but what does this all mean in terms of 2012?
The wings are pointing towards a certain part of this diagram where it breaks down units of time into 8.67-year intervals. And the way that those wings point says that right now we are lying 8.67 years away from the end of this cycle. We'll figure it out.
Now, what does that mean, though, the end of the cycle?
That means that, you know, they're showing us the Mayan calendar, and they're telling us that when the crop formation went down, we're 8.67 years away from it, and that's almost exactly correct. So the crop formation defines when it was put down, and it defines when the end of the calendar is. It shows you the calendar, and it gives you a precise timeline of how much more time we've got left before it happens.
Before what happens, though?
Whatever 2012 is supposed to be, and that's where the crop formation leaves you to figure
all
out.
All right, so that we don't know yet.
Well, I think I got a good idea. But no, the formation doesn't tell us that. What the formation does is it gives self-referential coordinates. It refers to itself two different ways. It uses both Mayan and Aztec cosmology. It's a little complicated, but it's all written up on Crop Circle Connector.
All right, well, when we come back, David, I want you to tell us a little bit about what you think that is. By the way, we've got a lot of images that you've supplied us that are linked up right now.
Oh, we got them up.
They're there on
that
the Coast to Coast
is
website.
On the website, then. You can all go see it on coasttocoastam.com.
It's on page 3 after you click the View Images link right by David's name, and it is there. Matter of fact, you got us 20 images, and Lex tells me they're all ready to go now.
Rock and roll.
Excellent, indeed. Your website, of course, though, again, is ascension2000.com, right?
That is correct.
Okay, and that's linked up with coasttocoastam.com. Our guest tonight, David Wilcock, we're going to be talking with him about these changes. You know, it's kind of funny you say this, David, because just a few days ago, scientists were beginning to say that things in the solar system are beginning to affect, not the sun now, but just things in the solar system, gases and things, are beginning to affect the planet. And here you are talking about this interplanetary climate change, which you've been talking about for much longer than what these scientists have.
The weight of evidence is outrageous.
Stay with us. David Wilcock, our guest. Let's find out what he thinks happens in 2012, right here on Coast to Coast AM. David, that crop circle image, that crop formation, this one indeed a circle. I mean, there is no way this thing could have been hoaxed. There is no way.
Great, yeah.
I mean, my gosh, you know, I'm talking to people about that, and I mean, it would take somebody 6 weeks to do this with a team of experts, and they'd be seen by that time.
Every year they show up overnight in places that nobody's been seen, and they have anomalous formations. I mean, some of the things you don't even see clearly in the image, because the way that the crops get laid down is not bent or broken. There's no muddy footprints. There's nothing like that. The crops are actually bent at the growth nodes.
And aren't they sometimes genetically altered or there is a change? Exactly.
Yeah, they'll keep on growing even though they've been bent over. They don't die. They actually keep on growing. And there are sometimes significant changes in the seeds, in the way that the seed's DNA looks, changes in the growth nodes and the size of the growth nodes, signs of swelling, which would indicate that they were heated from within. So it appears that, you know, a lot of people have concluded that there's some kind of microwave energy going on.
Why is it in the form of a message, but it's done in such a very strange way? Why don't they make it easy for us to determine and decipher exactly what they're trying to tell us?
Because the higher forces are never going to openly reveal themselves to us until we as a planet make a consensus that we would like them to do so. They cannot just lay down in the crops somewhere this paragraph of text that says, hey guys, we're here, 2012, there's going to be this outrageous thing that's going to change DNA, and you guys need to try to get ready for that by opening up to your own spiritual self.
Well, and maybe we're definitely not ready either. Maybe we haven't proven ourselves to the galactic force out there.
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the basic things that they seem to be wanting is for us to work out some of our most basic differences with each other. And if we don't do that, the situation will still happen.
We may never do that.
Well, it's not so much at this point that people need to worry about what's going on in global geopolitics as much as what's going on in their own lives. These higher beings did contact members of our governments, including President Eisenhower. He had a direct contact with positive entities, but the governments did not want to take the deal that the positive entities offered, which was teach your people about spirituality and about world peace and being able to accept each other, and then when you can do that, we'll be able to offer you a lot more assistance.
I don't know if you heard the program right before you came on, David, but I had an interview with an executive producer of a television station in Albuquerque where they have interviewed an old rancher woman who's failing in health, and she was a Roswell crash witness.
Yeah.
And she says, you know what, I don't care anymore. I'm not afraid of the government. And she decided almost on her deathbed, she's not quite there yet, thank
right.
God, but she has decided that she wants to tell all about that, and
wow.
I find that to be remarkable.
Well, yeah, the Roswell crash was not the first incident. There was the so-called Battle of L.A. that happened, I think, in 1943,
mm-hmm.
where everybody was firing at this thing in the sky that, when you look at the pictures, the inverted image of it shows this little saucer in the sky, and they're all firing at it.
It was not a Japanese plane, as some people thought.
No,
not at all. Anyway, let's get back to 2012. You have, and by the way, in order for people to understand where you're coming from tonight, you have been called, and you may very well be, the reincarnated Edgar Cayce. The picture in your book, The Reincarnation of Edgar Cayce, that was done with you and Winfrey, is probably the most uncanny resemblance I have ever seen.
Even among the reincarnation cases that are out there, the facial similarity is unusually high quality.
Do you believe you're Edgar Cayce?
Well, I believe that there is a very strong connection between myself and Edgar Cayce.
I mean, because you do many of the things he did. You're very psychic, and you're an intuitive.
Let me give a couple examples so it doesn't sound like we're just blowing smoke here. Richard is going to be co-presenting with me at this Bay Area UFO Expo.
Where I will meet you, by the way.
We're going to get to hang out, George. It'll
yep.
be cool. So, I'm going to get to see everybody there, and it's at the Westin Hotel. You can still get a reservation. The link to that is off of Richard's website, www.enterprisemission.com. And I'm going to be there, and I'll be hanging around for the other 2 days, and I should be at least partially available to people if they want to come up and see me. But I'll probably get mobbed, but nonetheless.
you just might.
Don't I'm going to be there. You know, I got the last seat on the flight, so I'm going to have to sit in between two people, but what the heck, you know? I need to get there. This is important. So,
do you think anybody will say, my God, I'm sitting next to Edgar Cayce?
Well, I mean, I've got kind of longish hair and a beard now, which helps to kind of blur the resemblance.
Ah, okay.
But, see, now I just gave it away.
See? Now I know what to look for, who to look for, at least. But anyways, the reason for...
But let me tell you about Victoria.
All right.
She got on the phone with me. She's the director of this Bay Area Expo, and she's also the person you'll be talking to when you call up for your reservation.
Mm-hmm.
So I basically, in the first 5 minutes of the conversation, told her everything that was going on in her life. and what she needed to do to help herself get through it. And she didn't tell me a single thing, and she was practically in tears at how accurate I was.
And you don't do it in a trance state like Edgar did, right?
Well, I don't have to. This was just light trance. This wasn't actually a psychic reading as much as it was just pulling out whatever was coming to me telepathically.
Mm-hmm.
A psychic reading is a much different story. And that's the other story I want to tell you, just so that we have some legitimacy built up. Now, I'm not even going to have to stretch that far in the past. All I'm going to do is stretch back to Sunday. This last Sunday, I had a client from 1 p.m. to 2:30 p.m. He was an older man. He was in his 70s, and he'd been doing metaphysics his whole life. He was concerned that he might not be meeting his purpose because in his waking life, he didn't really seem to be doing that much. He'd been involved in metaphysics for a long time, but now he was basically just making enough money to get by and living by himself and didn't really know if his life had meaning.
What took him so long to realize that?
Well, sometimes people get to that dark night of the soul in different ways.
Some people, it happens
when they get hit by a car and it's like their whole life crashes in. For other people, it's like that slow, quiet creeping in of realizing, wow, you know, things just haven't changed, and now it's like 10 years later, as the English call it, the quiet desperation. So anyway, he had a reading with me, and he had not told me anything about his dreams other than a couple visions that were not related to what I'm about to tell you. So lately when I've been doing these readings, I'd say probably during the last year, I've actually become less conscious of the content. To the point now where a lot of the times when I'm doing readings for clients that have a higher level of vibration, I don't have any awareness of what I said. I mean, I might be able to remember 5% of the content, and that's only by visual images, but it's basically like when my body starts talking, I'm checking out.
And that's it, yeah, okay.
So anyway, let me tell you what happened. Here's this guy, right? He's not doing much in the waking world that he feels is important. So I go through the reading, I come out of the reading, and I don't know what the heck just happened, and the guy's crying on the other end of the phone. And I'm like, what's going on, man? And he said that the reading told him that he was, every time he was asleep, going around and finding people who had died but had not yet gone on to their final place. They were kind of stuck around the earth, like in the movie Sixth Sense or something like that,
mm-hmm.
And they couldn't get out of here. And he was going around and finding these people, but not only that, but he specialized in people whose souls were extraterrestrial. I know that sounds a little weird, but the idea is that some people come from a higher plane and volunteer to be human. They look just like anybody else, but they're very different inside. They feel different. They're more sensitive. There's a lot of these people, probably 100 million of them, and it appears that I'm one of them as well. We could get into that if we wanted to, but anyway, he was in tears because the reading had actually said to him, as you already know, when you wake up in the morning, you are often waving goodbye to these people that you have just saved. And he was crying because he couldn't understand why every time he woke up in the morning, he was having these dreams and waving at strangers. So he was just blown away because he had no idea that the reading was going to say something that accurate. Now, the problem is, I'm sure when people are hearing this, they're saying, oh, my God, I got to have a reading. We already have a one-year-long wait list. So we worked out a solution. And the solution is that I've made my first CD. It's called What is My Purpose? Because that's a question everybody asks. And as it turns out, that question has a pretty common answer that most everybody gets when they ask for a reading. It's pretty much the same thing. So we've got that CD on sale on my website, ascension2000.com, for $11. We're not trying to be greedy. And I also autograph it for you. So if you are interested and you want to feel out what the source is like and you think you might want a reading at some point, definitely check out the CD first. And maybe later in the show I could play you an excerpt from that.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that. What
you can actually hear a reading in progress.
Our friend Uri Geller is very impressed with you. How did that happen?
Well, it's an amazing story because he stumbled over my website. People love to call it that. They say they stumbled over it. He stumbled over my website in January 2000, on the 10th, I believe. And I didn't even know about it for like a year. Nobody emailed me or anything. So here's this outrageous endorsement from a man who I highly respect. I know he's controversial, but I really respect his work. I've read a lot of his books. And he's a brilliant man. and a very highly gifted man. And he's also very highly psychic. I mean, people think, oh, yeah, he bends the spoons, but he's been tested in the laboratory as a phenomenally accurate psychic.
Oh, yeah, he was more than just a spoon bender.
Oh, yeah, much more. And if you read the old book, Uri, that's the title of it,
mm-hmm.
and his work that he did with Andrea Puharich, that stuff is so far out that it totally bends the ability of the mind to even conceive that it could have happened. Because it's so far out. I mean, things teleporting and all kinds of weird stuff. So anyway, it does seem to mean something when he would independently find my website, read my story, and decide for himself, without anybody prompting him to do it, to go and publish an article on his website saying, this guy, David Wilcock, is the real thing.
Which means you're Edgar Cayce.
Right.
That's what he meant.
Yeah, he actually said, David Wilcock is Edgar Cayce. You know, that's his own words. And so that was what they wanted to put on the cover of the book. So it's right there on the cover of
Cayce's,
the book.
Cayce's family, of course, a little hesitant to admit that.
Yeah. I've heard a gossip rumor lately, which is that people are starting to read the book at the Cayce Institute, the ARE as it's called. And they're realizing that this is a lot more compelling than they thought, and they can't just brush it off instantly.
Well, does it
but
bother
nobody
you?
Nobody knows what to do with it.
Does it bother you that they don't freely come forward and say, okay, we admit that David is indeed my father or our relative, Edgar Cayce?
I mean, think about it, man. I've been living with this truth for 6.5 years now. It's not like I wake up in the morning with a sore stomach and because I haven't been sleeping because I'm worried about whether people will accept me.
Mm-hmm.
I had
mm-hmm.
to deal with all this stuff in 1998when I first found out, and I'm like, oh my God, what am I supposed to do?
So you're used to it.
So I showed up. I mean, I went up to the front desk and I said, I believe I may be Edgar Cayce. I mean, it was ridiculous.
You went down to Virginia Beach?
Yeah, I was in Virginia Beach before I even found out that I was Edgar Cayce.
Okay, you got to tell me this story. So you walk in and you say, I'm Edgar Cayce?
Pretty much. I mean, I called and made an appointment, but that's about how it happened, yeah.
And what
and they got me in touch with the guy that deals with all the freaks and the cranks. And I sat there and dropped my whole story for about 2 hours, which is an amazing story because I've been doing psychic readings for a year and a half.
So at least you got an audience.
Yeah. And then I get all the way done, and the guy says, well, your story is extremely fascinating, and every week I get at least one person coming up in here with a story just as fascinating as yours, and they also think that they were Edgar Cayce. So I said, look at the facial similarity. He said, well, I don't see it, but it's like, I mean, we've had the pictures up. You've seen it, George.
I've seen it. I mean, it is uncanny,
obvious.
I'll tell you. I mean, it's.
And then I showed him the astrology, and I showed him the fact, I'm like, look at this. Look at Mercury. My Mercury, when I was born, sits right on top of Edgar's Mercury. My Venus sits right on top of his Venus.
Yep.
My Sun is on his Sun. The Moon is on the Moon, and Mars is on Mars. And it's so spot on that it's the only time in 157 years after he died that could happen. But here's where things get weird, and this is why I don't want to just say reincarnation. My business associate, Vara Linklip, who actually takes the clients, and her father's listening tonight. Hey, Roger, how's it going, buddy? Vara had a companion named Lloyd, and Lloyd was born in the only other time that somebody could have been born and almost have as much astrological connection to Cayce as I did.
Really?
March
okay.
8th, 1954. Now, he also has a more than subtle facial similarity to Edgar Cayce, and he was a phenomenal psychic and was actually being studied by Berkeley Psychic Institute before he had a sudden and untimely death. He literally just passed away on his couch in the living room.
There can't be or couldn't have been two Edgar Cayces out
there. Well, but what is a soul? Do we understand what a soul is? Do we really think that it's just one guy?
Have you divided? Maybe?
Well, I'm starting to think of the idea here that, Lloyd was almost as much Edgar Cayce as I am. And how is it that these three lives would intertwine? I mean, that's just the beginning of the story. You want to hear the really interesting part.
Yeah, well, as our friend Paul Harvey would say, the rest of the
story.
Well,
this is a fascinating story, and I've never gone public about it before, but I think it's the right time.
Can you tell me? I got 2 minutes before
the
top of
the hour. Yeah, we can do it in 2 minutes.
Go.
Lloyd passed away during the movie True Lies. About a year, I hadn't met either of them. I didn't even know they existed, Vara or Lloyd. About a year before that, somebody had given me a copy of that videotape. The last thing I did before I came to Louisville and met Vara is I threw away that tape. Then we were watching TV together, and it was, and we were flipping through channels, and it was at the exact point in the movie where he passed away. And Vara says, "Oh, hello, Lloyd." And I'm like, "What are you talking about?" And she tells me that he passed away during this scene, and I say, "I just threw away that videotape." I mean, that's just, it was staggering.
That is eerie, yeah.
Then when she looks at the astrology and says the only other time that somebody could be almost as related to Edgar as David was March 8, 1954, which is exactly when he was born. The guy looks a little like Casey, more than passing, and he was phenomenally psychic. And that all of our lives intertwine together like this.
Now, you know? is it safe to say that you give prophetic predictions like Casey? Is that accurate?
Yeah. I mean, I've seen the future accurately on many occasions, and I've published prophecies that came true.
Now, what you're going to tell us, and we're going to have to talk about it next hour, about 2012, is this good news for us, or is this
extraordinarily good news?
Well, that's good. Finally, someone who's not a doom and gloomer.
I'm willing to stake my entire reputation on the fact that this event is real. We can scientifically explain with hyperdimensional physics what's happening, how it will happen, how it will affect DNA, how it will affect consciousness, how it will affect spirituality. And we also know and have a pretty good idea of what we're going to be able to do after it happens. We will be able to levitate. We will be able to fast forward and rewind linear time like a videotape. We'll be able to do instant healing, instant telepathy. This is a phenomenal change in a human being. It's on the level of what happened to Neo at the end of the first Matrix movie.
And the Mayans knew about this.
They sure did. That's why they called it the New World, the Fifth World, Golden Age.
Stay with us, David. We'll be back with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. I'm George. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our guest tonight, David Wilcock. David, let's talk a little bit about this 2012 moment.
Okay.
Did it come to you in some kind of prophetic, intuitive way, or somewhat differently?
Well, in this case, it was a product of research and finding out. I mean, let's set up the story a little bit here. As I think I already told you before, a friend of mine drove down in 1992 when I was a sophomore in college at SUNY, and told me that his college professor had worked for NASA in the higher echelons in the 1970s, and it was common knowledge to everyone up there that UFOs had indeed crashed and that technology and bodies had been retrieved and the technology had been reverse-engineered to make many of the things that we now take for granted, like computer chips, fiber optics, Teflon, LED lights, infrared night vision, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really a profound moment of awakening for me. I'd had psychic experience happening earlier, which we talked about in the last show. When I was 7 years old, I was reading full-length adult books on ESP and performing experiments, but I didn't realize there was a UFO connection and that UFOs could be real until this time as a sophomore. The information was very specific. It got into the propulsion systems and so forth. And so within about 2 weeks after I was told that, when I could finally start breathing again, I decided to devote my life to figuring out how this stuff was affecting us and what did it mean? Why were these entities here? So the next big step for me only happened a few months later, which was that somebody, the same friend, had seen the video of Richard Hoagland speaking at the United Nations. And I'm thinking, okay, here's this guy who worked for Walter Cronkite, was on the nightly news, and was invited to speak at the UN, talking about the idea that there's a face on Mars, that it was obviously built intelligently because it's near this complex of pyramids, and even more amazingly, the pyramid complex and the face together have a series of geometric patterns which some people have tried to argue with them, but there's a lot of them that you can't argue with at all. They're very unambiguous.
That's true.
Showing you that there's a new physics going on, showing you this idea that you stick the tetrahedron inside the sphere. Now, how this relates to interplanetary climate change, if you go to the first page of images that we have up on the site right now. If you go to www.coasttocoastam.com, then when you see my name, David Wilcock, there's a little link there that says View Images. Click on that, and then the first thing that you see here is the after effect of a 2,500% increase in the brightness of Venus, where this green glow shows up that they didn't see at all back in 1975. And now it's there. Now, the thing that you notice for those who don't have a computer in front of them is that this green brightness is not just like some amorphous blob sitting there on the surface. It's in a straight line. And furthermore, the straight line is perfectly positioned in Venus to show you that it's part of a triangle. And so what I did is I showed the straight line, and then I drew a triangle in around it. And then I showed these other lines behind the triangle that shows that it's actually a three-dimensional object where it has four sides and every side's a triangle, like a little pyramid, except that it has a triangle on the bottom instead of a square. And those little triangular pyramids are energy patterns that seem to be showing up throughout the solar system. You see the great red spot on Jupiter, see the great dark spot on Neptune. And one of the things that I discovered in my research is that that great dark spot actually flipped over. It used to be in the southern hemisphere, and then it flipped over into the northern hemisphere. And it actually stayed in one place once it flipped over. And they say, the scientists said, it appears to be fixed at a trapped latitude, and they did not know how that could happen or why. So anyway, we're going to talk about some of this stuff some more, but before we get too into it, let's try to do overview. So the overview of this interplanetary climate change.
And this is all related to the Mayan calendar, Andy?
Right, that's what I'm mapping back into.
Okay.
You were basically asking me, how did I find out about the Mayan calendar? Did it come to me intuitively or what?
Right.
So Richard's work got me excited about this hyperdimensional physics, and I said, if he's discovered this, there's got to be a heck of a lot more going on than just what he's got so far. And I really became passionately dedicated to it. So in the ensuing 3 years, I had no intention that I would ever be channeling. I didn't even want to read channel books because I was in a scientific mindset. And it was after 3 years that I'd read probably some 500 books and could recite back whatever the book said. And when I applied to a graduate school for metaphysical study, I handed them the whole list and I said, hey, look, you know, you pick any book on that entire list, and I will give you on the spot a 15-minute discourse on its contents. And they didn't take me up on the offer. I wasn't actually accepted, probably because of my financial situation. But anyway, in the course of this 3 years of research, I'd heard about this Mayan calendar in 2012, and I'd heard the word ascension pop up, and the idea that some type of incredible shift was going to happen with matter, energy, and consciousness all changing. Now, an important event happened to me when I graduated from college, after I'd read these 500 books, after I had been turned down by this graduate school. Here I thought I was going to be in beautiful Boulder, Colorado, studying and learning, and I come back and I'm working these desperate factory jobs and just miserable $6 an hour, and after more and more suffering, I finally decided to move back to the town I went to college at.
Which was?
New Paltz, New York.
Okay.
90 miles north of New York City off exit 18, New York State Thruway. And I know that because I used to work at a hotel in New Paltz. So anyway, in New Paltz, I got a job working at a mental hospital. And, you know, considering how much I'd learned about the way things really work, I was often glad that I had keys to the door so I could get out at the end of my shift. Because I figured if I told people what I'd been reading about, and Face on Mars and so forth, they might just say,
they'd keep you there.
Hey, let's just roll you over a few more shifts here, David.
Yeah, yeah. And give you your own room.
Yeah. So it was the next thing I know, after 2.5 grueling weeks where I was picked on for the acne that I had, and these people really, they were just hurting inside, and so they took it out on me. I don't blame them for that, but that's just where they were at. So after 2.5 weeks, I get fired. And I'm fired because I was too friendly to the patients. Now, check that out, huh? I mean, what does that say?
Yeah.
So anyway, after I got fired, I was all brokenhearted and miserable. I cried for a half an hour in my car, and there were these family of five wild turkeys that would walk around the outside of the hospital, and I watched them walking, and that just made me cry even more because I knew I'd never see the turkeys again. I drove up the thruway to Albany, And before I went back to my mother's house for Thanksgiving, because that's what time it was, Thanksgiving 1995, I stopped in at the Barnes & Noble bookstore on Wolf Road in Albany, and I found this book by Dr. Scott Mandelker called From Elsewhere that talked about the idea that people could be ET souls. And I read the book, and I get to this questionnaire at the back, and he has 12 questions that say, if you can answer these questions in the affirmative, then your soul is probably an extraterrestrial soul. And I read these 12 questions, and it's like no one in the history of my life has ever gotten more directly personal of really knowing who I am behind all the walls that I was putting up to other people.
But what kind of questions would they have been, Dave?
Well, I actually have the book right here. I didn't plan on talking about this, but I just happen to have the book right here, so let me read you something.
I'd love to know what makes an ET soul.
All right, let's rock it. You are most likely an ET wanderer if, number one, you are often lost in daydreams of ETs, UFOs, other worlds, space travel, and utopian societies as a child. Your family thought you were a bit odd without knowing quite why. Number two, you always felt like your parents were not your true parents, that your real family was far away and hidden.
Now, did you have to say yes to all of them?
No.
Okay.
It says here it's a subjective measurement. It's only a broad stroke portrait.
Well, let's do me. All right, let's ask the questions and let's see what I am.
Okay.
I would have said yes to your first question.
Okay.
No to your second.
Okay. Number three, you've had one or more vivid UFO experiences in a dream or during waking hours which dramatically changed your life, helped to resolve doubts, inspire confidence and hope, and gave you meaning and a greater purpose.
I would say in a dream, yes, but never in real life.
Well, that's good enough.
Okay.
So we got two hits so far.
All right.
Number four, you are genuinely kind, gentle, harmless, peaceful, and non-aggressive, not just sometimes, but almost always. You're not much interested in money or possessions, so if someone must do without, it usually becomes you. This is your habitual self-sacrificing nature.
I would say yes, unless I'm really pushed. If I saw someone being violent to someone, I would step in and be pretty darn violent myself.
Well, check this out. The very next sentence says, acts of human cruelty, violence, and perpetual global warfare seem really strange, or shall we say alien to you. You just can't figure out all this anger, rage, and competition.
True.
Number five. So we got 3 out of 12.
Three out of 4 so far.
Right. Well, 12 altogether is what we're going to have at the end, but
all right,
we're just counting it up. Number 5, you have a hard time recognizing evil and trickery. Some people have called you naive, and they're right. When you do perceive genuine negativity in your midst, you recoil in horror, and you may feel shocked that, quote-unquote, some people would really do something like that. In a subtle way, you feel confused. Perhaps you vaguely sense having known a world that was free of this disharmony.
I'd say yes. That's a tough one, but
right.
I'd go yes.
Okay. So that's 4. Number 6, the essence of your life is serving others, be they family, friends, or in your profession, and you cherish great ideals, which may also be somewhat innocent and naive in worldly terms. But you sincerely and deeply hope to improve the world. You are disappointed and frustrated when these hopes and dreams don't materialize.
Yes.
Can we say Hurricane Charlie?
Yep. You listen.
We'll get into that. Number 7, you completely embrace the scientific temperament with a cool, reasoned, and measured approach to life. Human passions and red-hot desires seem strange. You are baffled by these emotions. Romance and the world of feelings are foreign to your natural way. You analyze experiences, so people say you're always in your head, which is true. Note, this type of wanderer is less common and probably wouldn't be reading this book. His skepticism is too great.
I'd say no on that one.
Right. I didn't really get a hit on that at the time, but then it came to be more like me later on.
Mm-hmm.
Number 8, you can easily get lost in science fiction, medieval epic fantasy like The Hobbit, and visionary art.
Yes.
Okay. No need to go further on that one. Number 9, you have an insatiable interest in UFOs, life on other worlds, or previous Earth civilizations such as Atlantis or Lemuria. Duh.
Yes.
Number 10, you have a strong interest in mystic spirituality, Eastern and Western, both in theory and practice. And you have a deep sense, perhaps, that you used to have great powers and somehow lost them. You don't know how, but that's how you feel. You may feel, therefore, that it's unnecessary to try to discipline yourself, since you've already been there and done that, but somehow you forgot what you once knew. People may doubt your resolve on this issue, but you know it's not quite that simple.
I'd give that a yes.
All right. Number 11, you have become a conscious channel for ETs or other sources not from Earth, and you realize the purpose of your life is to help others grow and evolve. Most likely you are not a sleeping wanderer at this point.
Yeah, now that's tough. I don't believe I'm a channeler, but I do think that my purpose, obviously, just by the nature of what I do, is to help other people. So what do I do?
I mean, I think the way in which you speak shows that you have an intuitive contact. I don't think that it's so formally developed to call it channeling, but I mean...
Should I put down yes, then?
Well, yeah. I mean, Richard, when he's on the air, you hear stuff tumble out of his mouth so fast, and you can hear that I'm a highly developed intuitive. I can speak at a rapid speed, but Richard is as good at it as I am. He just doesn't call it intuitive.
Richard may be the best at it, David.
Yeah, he's amazing. I love working with Richard, and we're going to be there next weekend at the Bay Area UFO Expo, so I hope I see some of you guys out there.
Number 12.
Number 12, you feel, and perhaps all your life, have felt tremendously alienated and a sense that you don't quite fit in. Maybe you have hoped to be like other people, you have tried your best to look normal or feel normal, or imagine yourself to be like everyone else, but the bottom line is that you simply feel different and you always have.
Nope, that's a no. That's a no.
Okay.
So I got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 of them yes. What does this mean?
Of course, I'll read what it says. Of course, the questionnaire is not exhaustive. Simply answering yes to any one point doesn't necessarily mean you're from elsewhere. Although some questions are pretty good indicators, there are no guarantees, and I assume no legal liability. Only you can determine whether or not you are an ET soul. In most cultures, external sources determine what's right and wrong, true and false. If you're seriously wondering whether or not you're a wanderer or an ET soul, don't expect support and fair hearing from other people. Many marriages are broken on the rocks of an ET announcement. Be careful to whom you turn for feedback and guidance. Some people are surely going to freak out or question your sanity. So basically, it's like the more hits you get on that list, the more likely it is to be.
Right. And so I don't know if I am or not. But
well, I would say that anybody who scores above a 4 or 5 is a pretty darn good likelihood.
You really? Okay.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, you got to understand, George, I work with these people all the time because the way that we set up the readings, you can only ask certain kinds of questions, questions that directly relate to the evolution of mind, body, and spirit. And if people don't want to know that kind of stuff, we're not going to give them a reading. We're not going to say where the oil wells are or how you should shave your poodle. We're only going to tell you something that's going to help you in 10,000 years like it would today, which means it's not necessarily going to be all that specific to your current situation. Only in the sense of how your own situation right now affects your overall spiritual development.
Okay. Anyway, I diverted you a little bit because I wanted to take the test.
Well, that's cool. I mean, and I hope everybody out there has too, because if you can figure out that you volunteered to be human, okay, that's the key point. You volunteered to do this. Then all of a sudden it starts to make sense. Why are you listening to the show every night or actually doing the show?
Mm-hmm.
You know, why are you so doggone fascinated that you can't let this stuff go? Why are you so amazed that nobody else is paying attention? All this stuff relates to the fact that you volunteered to be here, you knew this planet was in trouble, and you came here to help, and you don't have to save the world or be the Messiah or do anything grandiose or fantastic. You're basically one of about 100 million people altogether, probably about one out of every 60 people, so everybody knows one of these people. And they just are people that everybody thinks of as wise and compassionate and friendly and you know, living the talk and walking the walk. So I really do feel that these wanderers are an important part of what's going on right now because they're helping to anchor in a higher vibration to this planet. And when I talk about vibration, I'm talking about these energy fields that were, you know, the Russians have discovered and that Dr. Eugene Maloff was talking about. So when we're looking at interplanetary climate change, we're looking at the entire solar system, not just showing physical changes, which, of course, in that view images section on coasttocoastam.com, you can see images of some of these actual changes, dust storms that sweep across Mars in 3 months, covering the whole planet. And then scientists here say that Art's global superstorm can't happen, but is right there on Mars in plain sight, photographed by the Hubble Space Telescope. And it's like this all over the solar system, this huge tube of energy that surrounds Jupiter that wasn't there, suddenly shows up and then gets 200% brighter. But this is not just electromagnetic energy. This is energy that maps directly to consciousness. One of the things I want to talk about when we get back after the break is an experiment that was done by a leading Russian scientist where he actually developed a device that will point towards these energy fields. Not electromagnetic, but what they call torsion fields.
Is this intelligently designed?
Yeah. I mean, the galaxy itself, according to the material that I've worked with, the galaxy itself is an intelligent, sentient being. It has set up a series of 22 archetypal events that everybody's going to go through in their life on a certain schedule, which you get to choose how you're going to do it.
Well, how in the heck did the Mayans figure this out?
The Mayans had a contact, supposedly, from a sixth density or sixth dimensional extraterrestrial source that basically just handed them the information and said, hey, here's how things work. If a certain culture has developed itself spiritually enough that they can call for this information to be given to them, and they're isolated from other people, they can get it.
All right, stay with us, David. We'll be right back. Tell us a little bit about that Russian experiment as well when we come right back. Top of the hour, we'll open up the phone lines. David Wilcock, our guest. David, tell us about this Russian scientist and his experiment.
Well, yeah, this directly ties in with the 2012 information and why it's all relevant. This is one of those central links that just brings it all together. Now, here's the deal. This particular man was a rocket scientist and had done a lot of really good work with bringing the Russian people to a knowledge of how to get out into space and how to possibly mine the moon for fuel for rockets and so forth. But he had an experience where under Stalin, he was put into a concentration camp and spent a long period of time stuck in this concentration camp. And when he got out, he started to do this in the 50s. He started to do this incredible research where he became aware of this new information. Now, the guy's name is Dr. Nikolai Kozarev, K-O-Z-Y-R-E-V.
Still alive?
No.
Okay.
He passed away in the 80s. And anyway, one of the things that he discovered was started with him looking at colonies of bacteria and seeing that they grew in spiraling form, that a spiral would actually show up in these bacteria. He became convinced there was an energy source that actually went into life that was spiraling, that was not electromagnetic energy. And over the course of a series of experiments that I detail in my third book, which is free on my website called Divine Cosmos, which you can read at ascension2000.com, ascension2000.com, Kozarev's experiments found this energy source through things as simple as moving an object through the air. Just the movement alone, even in a vacuum-sealed area, would create some kind of energy wave that you could measure. Now, he discovered a way to measure these waves, and he was doing all these mechanical experiments and finding different ways to generate them mechanically, like, for example, smashing something or lifting something, anything that would cause these ripples. But then one day, he's sitting there reading his favorite story, which is The Temptation of Faust by the devil Mephistopheles.
Right.
And he gets really excited. And he has this device near him. He was running an experiment at the time, and the device was pointed at the experiment, obviously. And he gets this sudden spike of energy, and the needle turns and points at him.
At him?
Yeah. And all of a sudden, his whole world just kind of thundered in on him, and he said, these waves are consciousness.
It's out there. You know, there have been a number of people who believe now that consciousness is also science, and that never would have happened before.
Well, check it out. The other one that I really want to point out, because it ties in so directly to 2012, was from Dr. James Spottiswood, who's one of these parapsychological researchers, very well known, very well renowned, coming out of California, the whole Berkeley area, which again is where we have this UFO expo that I'll be speaking at in the weekend after this coming weekend, co-presenting with Richard on some of these same things we're talking about tonight. And George, you're going to be there. It should be great.
I will be there.
So anyway, I should also point out, well, we still have a chance that I have a cruise coming up in the Caribbean. That's in October.
I'll do that later.
We'll do that at the end of the show. So anyway, to get back to the point, we are dealing with a consciousness, and this guy, Dr. James Spottiswood, took 20 years worth of remote viewing data and data from a wide variety of psychic experiments, Ganzfeld, Zener cards, all these things where they were studying ordinary people to see if they were psychic in a laboratory. And he found out, what he was looking for was to see if there was any universal factor in time that would affect people's psychic accuracy. And what he found was that when the earth, when you doing the experiment, the psychic work, are on the earth aimed at the center of the galaxy, so that your point on that globe of the earth, if you imagine the earth like an orange in your hand and you're sitting on top of that orange, and then you point yourself towards the galactic center, at those times, people's psychic ability increases by almost 400%. They get 400% more accurate on these tests. So what does that tell us? That tells us that your position in the galaxy directly affects consciousness. You with me?
I'm with you, I think.
Okay. So what this really shows is that the galactic center is a source of energy that's very powerful that affects consciousness, so that when you're aimed at the center of the galaxy, it's like there's a radio beacon streaming at you, and you're picking up that wave, and it's affecting how you think.
Now, why the galaxy as opposed to the entire universe?
Well, the Russians, some of the Russians, like Dr. A.M. Mishin, have actually found waves that come from the center of the universe as well as the center of the galaxy.
So it's everywhere.
Yeah. But the galaxy center is like the strongest local area where these energy waves are coming to us. It appears to be the strongest one that we deal with day by day on the Earth. So it's not really too much more of a stretch to figure out that if these waves behave like a liquid, the ether, as it's called, and remember, Dr. Eugene Maloff, formerly the head science writer at NASA, right before he died, on the telephone with Richard, he said in no uncertain terms, this is not electromagnetic energy. It is a new kind of energy that most of our scientists know nothing about. There is another guy by the name of Dr. William Tift who discovered that the standard thing that everybody uses to figure out how far away a star is called redshift measurements. It's basically, without getting too detailed, it's they take the microwave energy from a star and they say, if the microwaves are this, then it's this far away, and if they're this, then it's this far away.
Okay, well, now, let's assume then that this is all true and that there is this form of energy that is out there.
Okay.
How does this all tie in then to what the Mayans may or may not have known?
2012 is like a boundary between oil and water. If you can imagine two fluids at two different levels of viscosity. Okay, just like oil and water in a salad container, then what happens is, as our solar system gets closer to this boundary that's sitting there in the galaxy, in other words, the galaxy has this field, if you can imagine this now, when you look at a bar magnet and you stick it under a piece of paper and then you sprinkle a bunch of iron filings over it, what happens?
They all go together.
You get these lines of magnetic force.
And you see a perfect pattern.
Right. Now, we know that the galaxy has a magnetic field, and a very strong one, which means that it's going to have lines of magnetic force where some of it is stronger than the rest. Now, those lines of magnetic force are not only magnetic energy, that's where this hyperdimensional energy shows up as well. So what's happening, in a very simple analogy, is our solar system in 2012 is going to bust into one of those magnetic lines of force in the galactic magnetic field.
Now, what does that mean?
It means that it has a stimulating and programming effect upon DNA just like it has every other time that this has happened. All the mass evolutions of species on the Earth have occurred, according to two University of Chicago paleontologists, David Rope and James Sepkoski, every 26 million years like clockwork. Now, we know that there's more solar activity in the last 60 years than there's been in the previous 1,000 years, and that graph is on page 3 of the View Images section on coasttocoastam.com. Now, if that's true, then it means that our carbon dating system's all screwed up, because we're assuming that it always stays the same, but the level that we think it stays at is a lot slower than what happens at the end of the cycle. So if the carbon dating says 26 million years, it's probably closer to something like 22.5. Now, if it's 22.5 and you multiply that by 10, you get 225 million years. That's exactly how long the galaxy takes to spin one time around. So now what we have is a galaxy, if you can imagine it like a pie, and you've cut the pie into 10 pieces. Each of those pieces, when you hit the boundary between one piece and another, every time we hit one of those, all the dinosaurs change, and they become something different. And these guys, these Chicago paleontologists, they had over 55,000 different genres of marine life. It was the most exhaustive fossil record ever put together. They did not know that they were going to find this when they were looking for it. In fact, they tried to do more research to disprove it because they said it doesn't make sense. Why would it be every 26 million years that there's a mass extinction and then these new species come up?
Are you saying that in 2012 that's the date of a new moment of extinction?
The extinction's already happening, man. I mean, look at what's happened in the last 100 years. We've lost over 60% of all the species on the Earth. The United Nations has already said that we're in a mass extinction event, which is equal to or greater than the Cretaceous-Tertiary boundary, which is the big dinosaur extinction everybody knows about.
Well, yeah, but you said 2012 was going to be a wonderful moment.
Extinction, we've already gotten past the extinction part. Now we're just waiting for the mass spontaneous evolution part, where the DNA starts changing within one or two generations.
You're not saying that human beings are going to be extinct.
No, but what I'm saying is that they're going to start giving birth to people that are going to look a little different and are going to be a little different. Whoa. It's already started with these indigo
children. Wait a minute. What are they going to look like?
Well, the eyes are going to gradually get bigger. They're going to gradually have less hair. The cranium is going to get larger. The bodies are going to get more slender. And before you know it, they're going to look like these beings in the UFOs that are traveling back in time as ourselves to visit us.
They're going to look like these grays that everybody describes.
Well, not necessarily. The gray is a more advanced stage, but the earlier stages just have larger eyes and bald heads that are larger. But those are people of ourselves that are actually traveling back in time to visit us, because they've already evolved to the point that they have time travel. But the thing we didn't think of is if people from our future come back in time to visit us because they can time travel, why would we automatically assume that they look like us when everything on Earth keeps changing and going into more sophisticated and complicated forms?
So you are saying, as the reincarnated Edgar Cayce, who talked about all kinds of Earth changes and Hall of Records and things, you are saying that in 2012 our DNA structure is going to start changing somewhat and that offspring will start looking like you've just described?
In the beginning, yes. There will be earlier stages of it in which you'll see kids being born that are highly telepathic, like myself, that have highly developed intuitive abilities. Some of them are going to be able to do telekinesis very dramatically.
Will this be a slow evolution, David, or will it occur 2012,
well,
bang, here we go?
It's already happening, but I believe in 2012 there's going to be like a sudden major shift. And the DNA evolution is a very important part of that. Because, again, we got to remember, this is not something we're just hanging out over the line talking about. This is something that's been happening at least 10 times in a row, like a clock, every 26 million years. And all the things that are going on throughout the solar system suggest the same conditions that were present when it's happened in the past.
How do you envision, then, this planet with this kind of change in terms of the people, what they can contribute to society? What's going to happen?
Society itself will be founded upon the principle of unconditional love. And that is so much different than what it is right now.
Well, I was going to say that it's about time.
Basically what's going to happen is that if you don't have the ability to love others that way, you're not going to be able to take on another incarnation. The only people that will be able to be born that can withstand that higher frequency are people who vibrate at the level of unconditional love.
So you're saying let's say an evil person passes on.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, that person's soul, if you believe in reincarnation, comes mm-hmm. back because it's trying to reach perfection. It comes
right.
back, it comes back.
Right.
You're saying they're not coming back anymore.
Well, he'll be reincarnating on a different planet that's still in third density.
But not on this planet.
Right.
Might he be in his own hell then by that time?
No more of the hell than he's in right now as he's listening to my voice.
Yeah, but we don't have to deal with him then, you're saying.
Well, yeah. I mean, basically the Earth has done its time. It's had its time to deal with this kind of experience. The Earth is also a sentient being, according to these teachings. It's also evolving. And it's growing out of the point where it needs this kind of stuff.
So are you saying, though, the planet will start purging itself of evil?
Well, I mean, they're just going to die, and then when they die, they're not going to be born again. It's pretty simple. It could take as long as 700 years. It could take as short as, like, 10 years. But the point is that it's going to happen, and the new babies that are born are going to be these star people, these children that have incredible new gifts to bring to us.
And I assume, then, that these are non-warring children.
Oh,
when
yeah.
they grow up, right?
Right. They're all going to have the qualities of that wanderer checklist that I just read you.
Well, let me tell you, David, if that can occur, it's a pretty dramatic change for this planet and probably well needed.
Well, you remember the DNA thing I talked about last time where Dr. Peter Garyev took a laser beam and shined it into a salamander's embryo, then took the remaining part of that beam with the wave of the DNA from the salamander on it, and shined it into a developing live frog embryo. And that frog embryo utterly and totally transformed into a salamander which grew into full adulthood and could breed with other salamanders and had no problems associated with genetic splicing or any of that stuff. He literally turned a frog into a salamander with energy.
Is this thing going to happen in another 26 million years again?
Sure. The Earth is going to keep on going this continuum, and apparently, as I've been told, eventually it will host third-dimensional life like ours again, third-density life, but not for a long time. There's going to be a good while where the Earth is fourth density. Now, here's the other thing, okay? There are bad ETs. There are negative ETs as well as positive ones, and some of the people in this new world are going to have to fight these battles to keep the negative ETs from trying to invade, which is what's already happening now. There's already this war of Armageddon that's been going on for 2,000 years between the good guys and the bad guys, and they're both trying to get their kicks in.
Do you mean like reptilians?
Well, again, we don't want to be interstellar racist, but it does happen to be that the Draconian Empire, as some have called it, is predominantly a reptilian-based species.
Right.
The reptilian seems to be the species that has the most intelligence and cunning and ability to organize and direct, whereas there are certain types of greys that are also negative, the ones with the large black eyes. But also, again, a lot of these greys are not negative. And so you can't just say, if it looks like that, it's bad, and if it looks like that, it's good.
How bumpy is the road going to be until we get to 2012, David?
Look at what just happened in Florida. You know, it doesn't really matter where you live. There are going to be what Ra calls inconveniences. And there's a really good source that I want to make sure I mention. It's called the Law of One series.
Mm-hmm.
It was channeled in the early 1980s, before any of this stuff about interplanetary climate change was known. But it has all that information already in it. So I can't claim that a lot of this stuff was mine, because basically I owe everything to these books. There's a website called www.llresearch.org. That's important you get the .org at the end. And anyway, these books are out there, and what an amazing source, because all these things I'm telling you are just small bits of what's in there. When I had been reading Richard Hoagland, reading all this other stuff, and then I threaded it all together and found the Law of One in January 1996 and explained everything. It explained the spiritual process of this ascension and what's happening to us. And I said, man, if this is for real, then there's got to be a scientific way to prove it, and that's what I've dedicated my life to doing.
All right, well, that's going to be fascinating to see that kind of change, biological as well as spiritual, with children in 2012. Even though what you say now, it's gradually happening, but the big effect will be in about 8 years. I'm George Norrie. We'll be back in a moment with David Wilcock. We'll take phone calls all hour now. Well, David, I got to tell you, your fascinating thoughts of changing DNA is pretty astounding. I'll tell you that. Hey, before we go to calls, David, give me your take. You had mentioned something about my experiment where I tried to slow down or move Hurricane Charley. It worked partially in that we shut down the tropical storm Bonnie. We also diverted the hurricane from hitting Tampa as we had called for, but right. The thing still went crazy. What did we do wrong?
Well, imagine that you and all the coast audience are people inside a sailboat. And imagine that you see that the wind is blowing in a certain direction and you don't want the sailboat to go in that direction, and you don't have the rudder, so you tell everybody, blow on the sail as hard as you can.
Right, right. That's what we did.
You with me? So basically, in some situations, it's going to work very well. There is a definite strength there. And in a situation like this hurricane, the increase in the severity was not due to any type of inversion of the effect that, your audience was generating. In fact, the very fact that you did it at all probably stopped it from having the 200-plus mile-an-hour winds and being like Category 5.
So you think it did have some benefit?
Oh, absolutely.
The experiment, okay.
Science stands fast. I mean, it's there is nothing wrong with trying to protect this planet. In fact, those kinds of experiments that you're doing are exactly what we need more of. But the thing is, a hurricane like that is the result of a cumulative buildup of energy that needs to be released. So what's really required is for there to be some way to stabilize the planet's energy fields, and that's why Richard and I, in the book we're going to write, are going to be talking about how an ultra-cheap worldwide system of pyramids could be built, probably for no more than a total of $150 million, which isn't really that much considering what people throw around these days.
Not worldwide. That's nothing.
And if we did that, it could significantly decrease Earth changes. And one of the things I wanted to point out before we go to calls, just real quick, is that if society as a whole understands and adopts the type of science that Richard and I are bringing out to the public now, which is still pretty fresh, cutting-edge stuff most people have never heard of, we will have interstellar travel. We will have teleportation. We will have limitless free energy. We will have anti-gravity. These are going to be commonplace things. And with it will come an increase in our spiritual and ethical qualities. So, in short, these prophecies about what we're going to be like become a lot more simple to understand when you realize that even if DNA did not change, the simple fact that we know this science is real, that we know it can't be suppressed forever, that people like Eugene Maloff are not going to keep dying in vain, that those deaths are going to mean something, that that price that he paid with his life is going to mean something. These technologies are real. They will be brought out to the public. And when that happens, there is going to obviously be a spiritual awakening because people will realize the connections between energy and consciousness and how their own consciousness affects the whole. So I would totally not encourage you to be disillusioned with the great experiments. They're very important, and in fact, you probably don't even realize how important they are.
Well, I know they're important. I just want to be able to control it a little better, if it can be.
Well, the best thing that you could probably do is just to say, we want to generate energy for something positive to happen, something that helps the world, without attachment to what that outcome is. You know, I mean, it might not be as dramatic and it might not be as like, see, I told you so, but just pay attention on the headlines the next couple of days and see what happens.
All right, let's go to the phones. All right, let's go to some of the calls, David. Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with David Wilcock. Hi there.
Hi.
Welcome. Where are you calling from?
New York.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I have a story to relate and then I have a few questions.
Sure, he's there.
What's your name?
My name is Anna.
Okay.
Yeah, you were talking about alien souls, and it's funny because one of the things was being very skeptical, and I had always been very skeptical. And I had always, you know, for years I walked around with no memories at all, just none. Like daily I'd forget what was going on for, you know, all my life. And then something shocked me, you know, like a couple of years ago. And I remembered all my life and some of my past lives. And I was just completely shocked because it was so different than who I thought I was. And I remembered being abducted when I was a child to another planet. And it was very strange because it was medical in nature, but they had done something to my mind, too, somehow strengthened it, I think, because now my family was indirectly involved with some kind of very negative entities that my father's grandmother was infested, I think, with either a reptile or something, a negative entity. And when my father's grandmother was about to die. Now, she was very fat and very, she went blind, and her skin and her body was just deteriorating because she was laying all the time. And this reptile wanted to infest another body. And I remember waking up from just these symbols being drawn on my body with blood. And it's because my mind was strengthened that I was able to wake up out of this really strong hypnosis that these reptiles put on people. It's incredible. It's so strong, people don't even realize it.
Sure.
And I remember...
Is there a question?
Are we working up to a question?
Come on. Easy, though.
Okay. I was going to tell you more things.
We don't have time for that. We've got every line lit, so how about a question?
Okay. If I could tell you everything, you would see that there's a very specific pattern, you know? Like, if I could draw
up my... I can tell you that you're not alone. I mean, I know that you probably feel very alone with these experiences, but I talk to people all the time.
I don't really feel alone. I just don't understand. Like, I see a pattern, a very concrete pattern. If I was a mathematician, I could probably draw it out or write it in mathematics. But I don't see, the apex of what it is that I'm supposed to do.
Well, I would recommend going to my website and reading the Law of One study guide, especially Section 7, which is all free on the website. There's a section in there about dealing with negative greeting, which is where entities like that are trying to mess with you, and I think that you've done well in getting past that. These are natural experiences, and you can get through that disillusionment and come to a much greater clarity. So I thank you for the call. We have a lot of people we need to work through. So, George, let's have the next caller.
Yeah, and David, can people learn how to be intuitive?
Sure, of course.
Study, practice, meditation?
Yeah, I mean, in the future, society will openly acknowledge that, and we'll have much better intuitives because we'll have a good, solid training program that works, where you can get the kind of results that I get if you're willing to practice. Just like if you want to play piano long enough, you can be a concert pianist. If you want to practice the right exercises long enough, you can be a very powerful intuitive.
Wild card line, welcome to Coast to Coast. You're on with us. Hi there.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Blake. I'm driving down the road in Illinois.
Hi, Blake.
Well,
how's it going, Blake?
Pretty good.
All right.
I had one question. One question is, if what you're talking about, if there's a belief that maybe what we are today, if we were from the beginning of time, if we were not, instead of just not necessarily human, if we weren't genetically evolved from an alien that some people may call God or whatever, because I got something on that, if that's what you're thinking or saying.
Okay.
There was another program that George had on that he was kind of mentioning that with his other guest was.
Well, we know that our government has found, the black government has found 57 different varieties of ET. They call them the Heinz 57, and they all look human. So it seems to be the de facto standard for this galaxy.
Oh, okay. And another question is that my wife was wondering is that she has always been able to kind of sense or be in touch with spirits, and we've wondered if they're not just spirits or if it's spirits and maybe also be able to be in touch with ETs and not even realize it.
Yeah, I mean, you got to understand that ET is a very, very broad term. I mean, any entity that's not in a human form would be an ET.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, I'm not going to try to psychically read anybody on the air here, but I could say just based on a standard horse sense that your wife is obviously contacting something that's most likely her higher self. You know, it's a projection of herself meeting herself and saying, hey, you know, you can get to be where I am, and I'm going to try to help you get there. A lot of people are having these kind of experiences.
Well, that'll definitely probably freak her out some, because we'll hear the answer to it when it's replayed later this evening. But,
well, thanks for the call, Blake. We got to keep moving because we got a lot of people.
All right. Hey, David, by the way, you had mentioned your CD and that you might be able to play a very short clip of that. Is that possible? Can you do that for us?
Anytime you want, we can do that.
All right, we'll do that when we come back from the break, and then you can set it up for us just to tell us what we're going to be listening to.
Okay.
First-time caller line, welcome to Coast. Hi there.
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Good morning to you. Where are you calling from, and who are you?
David from Deerfield Beach, Florida.
Sure, David. Go ahead.
Yeah, I like that name.
Thank you, sir. Extreme pleasure to speak with you, Mr. Nuri. I became acquainted with your program about 6 weeks ago, and I'm absolutely hooked.
Well, the pleasure is mine, believe me.
Well, thank you. Your success is in your humility. David, I have two questions, if I may, please.
Good evening, David.
You spoke about the 26-million-year cycle and
right.
This energy force. Would you suggest it emanates from what we understand as a creator, or is this a total universal force?
Mm. Well, both answers are correct, actually.
Okay. Do you specifically designate a creator? I know you did say that.
Yeah, I mean, I know that, and I don't know if this is where you're going, but a lot of people wonder how does Jesus fit into all this?
Okay.
Apparently, from what I understand from this Law of One material that came out in the early 80s, which I think is the best channel material that was ever produced, where it's actually accurate, Jesus apparently, after the crucifixion, took on this consciousness of the galaxy, which is programming human life on all these planets throughout the whole galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a very, very significant event on this planet.
Yes.
Is there a creator? Yes. Does it appear to have set up a template for human life to evolve on any planet in this galaxy? Yes. Does it appear that life is a de facto standard throughout the cosmos? Yes. If we look at a line of sight between the Earth and the center of the galaxy, 99% of all that dust has the spectrographic signature of being living bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
That was done by the guy that co-discovered DNA, Dr. Crick.
Yes.
You have another quick question?
Yes, thank you. Preface by saying I have a book in my library called Mankind, the Birth of a New Species. I would think it was came out in the 70s. And
okay.
It spoke of this appearance of this new generation, and we must be aware of these children because
Correct.
They will be advanced.
Right.
The question, I'm 60 years old, and I've been able to read most of my lifetime. It's a gift God has given to me.
Okay.
I question the fact that we have this brain and we use so little of it. My conclusion is this, that lying dormant in our matter are all of these things and powers and abilities that we have lost to antiquity.
Okay, so what's the question exactly?
The question is this new period coming in, is this a triggering of that? And am I
okay,
logical?
So basically, does this 2012 event activate dormant regions of the brain, and is that part of this so-called ascension process?
Yes.
Absolutely. Absolutely correct. So
okay.
Thank you for that call.
Please, thank you. A pleasure, sir.
All right, David.
Appreciate you being on the program. 2012, how the minds. I'm still baffled, though, David, that those Mayans had the ability to do this. Now, here's another thing, and I don't know if you know this, or maybe we can tap into the Edgar Cayce portion of you. What happened to them? Where'd they go?
I think they ascended, honestly. Some people may, at 2012, be able to do what these Tibetan monks have done, which is that they just kind of burst into light, and all that you see is this little pile of clothing and fingernails and hair.
I mean, they've just disappeared.
Yeah, I think that I'm pretty sure that's what happened. Now, some people say that they ran out of food and water, and they just kind of evacuated the area. It's a little too weird for that to be the only answer, although that could be the answer. I'm
sure.
Not saying it's not.
Could they have gotten into some huge craft and taken off? Is that possible?
Anything's possible. I mean, they were definitely in contact with ETs that were landing, so it's possible, sure.
West of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi there, George.
Yes, sir.
Yes, David, this is Bill calling from Tucson.
Hey, nice to meet you, Bill.
Really intriguing program. David,
I'm glad you like it.
I'm currently doing research and writing a book tracing the sun worship of all the major religions of the world and literally examined hundreds of sun worship symbols.
That sounds like a very valid service.
And
good for you.
One thing I've noticed about all of them is they have a deep correlation in between. They all are cylindrical in shape, and they all have, for example, the ancient swastika, the ancient
right.
yin-yang,
yep.
the Mayan sun god, the Aztec, the Incan,
mm-hmm.
even the Celtic, in Hinduism, Islam, Buddhism, Shintoism,
yep.
Judaism, I found the same symbols that all go back, and as far back as I can trace them is the early Babylon.
So are you interested in knowing what those symbols actually mean?
Well, I know what they mean because
okay.
I traced them back to the Babylonian, Chaldean, and early Assyrian and Sumer
okay.
Civilizations.
Would you like to know what I think they mean?
Well, what I see in the crop circles is a fantastic correlation to these geometrical sun worship symbols.
Okay.
Are identical to these crop circles that are appearing all over the world.
Yes, that's totally correct.
Especially in the area of the ancient Celts there in Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And just wondered if you could give a comment on that. I'll
sure,
hang up.
Sure, sure.
All right, thank you.
Thanks. For the
bye-bye.
Question.
Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, these symbols, such as yin-yang and so forth, represent dynamic movement of this hyperdimensional energy. Basically, when I say dynamic movement, I mean if you have a big pot of soup and you're going to stir it with a spoon, then as you stir it, the soup is going to move, not just the spoon. And when you track that movement, that would be dynamic movement. So when you stir up the ether, like now that we're going into this new region of the galaxy, there's a disturbance there. There's a vibration, and it has ripples. There was a guy by the name of Dr. Sergei Smelikov, and I know, George, you're really going to like this. Maybe another time we should do a whole show just on this, where he found out that 2012 is an imploding cycle. It gets shorter and shorter the closer you get to 2012, and every time we hit one of these ripples, there's a spontaneous change in humanity.
I mean, I got to tell you, dude, I can't wait to get to 2012 just to see what's going to happen.
I think it's a lot more fantastic than I'm even willing to admit on the air right now, honestly. I'm willing to play it safe and say, yes, it looks like there's a DNA change. Yes, it looks like new people are going to be born. But if you really listen to what the Law of One said, it's way more than that. It's basically like that you have a meeting with a representation of divinity that's the most important symbol to you it could possibly be, and that you literally experience this spontaneous shift of consciousness and your soul and an outrageous experience.
All right, get your CD ready for just a few moments that we'll play, and you can set that up with us, David, when we come back, and then we'll finish the hour with the rest of the phone calls. Right, this program, my guest will be David von Kleist. Now, David is the husband of a Coast to Coast regular guest here, Joyce Riley, and he will be sharing some compelling evidence from his video 9/11 in plain sight, some of the very perplexing, unexplained, and mysterious circumstances involving the events at the Pentagon and the World Trade Center. I had an opportunity to look at the video, most of it captured by amateur videographers who were in the area at the time, also news events such as CNN, those venues as well. And I got to tell you, some of the video, as David points out in his video, very, very strange indeed. So we're going to be talking with David about that, just to bring in a different perspective of some of the events that occurred during that very horrible day in our nation's history. In a moment, we'll come back with our guest, David Wilcock. We'll listen in on a CD he's got very briefly and also go back to your calls. David, before we go back to more calls, set the scene for us a little bit about the CD and then tell us what we're going to hear.
Okay. What you're actually going to hear is different than what would happen if somebody got a client reading, because what I've done is I have a really nice studio here. The centerpiece of that studio is a keyboard from Yamaha called the Motif.
Mm-hmm.
And the Motif really is a wonderful keyboard. It's allowed me to make some really amazing music. So in addition to recording a reading, I also channeled the music in the background. Now, of course, you have to have skill in playing music and getting the studio to work, but once you have that and you just start the tape going, I just played what felt right. And the whole music for the whole CD was done in 3 hours, but it goes through a bunch of stylistic changes, and it's really nice. So we're only going to hear a little bitty excerpt of it, but this is a reading that was actually conducted for the average person who always asks the same question, which is, what is my purpose? What am I supposed to be doing here? Now, you're not going to hear the question get answered, but you're going to hear what my voice sounds like when I'm doing this reading. You'll hear the music in the background that sets the mood. And again, this is the first of about 12 CDs that we're going to be putting out. The next one should be out in 6 weeks. And it's available at a really low price of $11 on my website, so we're not trying to profit off of this as much as just get it out to people.
Okay,
so anyway,
let's listen to that.
Here we go. I am Ra. It is an honor and a privilege to greet you in the love and in the light of the one infinite creator. As is always the case with the information we would provide, we ask that you exercise your own discernment such that if any words you hear disagree with what feels right to you, that you simply cast them aside as lacking relevance on your path at this time. We do not wish to establish ourselves as an authority that is higher than your own internal spark of the divine.
Okay, very good.
Yeah, so that's just a little taste of a 65-minute long CD.
And can people, if they want that CD, just go to the website and order it?
Yeah, go to my website, www.ascension2000.com. There's a link right at the top that says, get your What Is My Purpose CD for $11. I'll personalize it, autograph it for you. 65 minutes of music and voice. There's a 22-minute introduction where it's like I'm on the radio and I'm just telling my story. And it starts you out from scratch, so if you don't know anything about this, you can get everything you need from the CD. Then there's a 45-minute long reading on there. There's new and changing music through the whole thing. And I'm really proud of it. It's full color, and it looks really nice, and you can hand it to somebody who doesn't know anything about this and turn them on. And, you know, we take the orders through PayPal, so you can do the e-check or the credit card or whatever, and it works really well.
Now, you're not channeling, are you, when you're doing this?
That's what you just heard, yeah. That was me actually speaking on behalf of a higher intelligence.
Okay, so you are channeling?
Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
All right, very good. Let's go to some of the calls now. Let's pick up with going to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, how are you, George?
Good. Good.
Yeah, I just wanted to run a couple quick questions by David.
What's your name?
Lamar.
Okay.
Yes, well, I've always believed that I was a wanderer, so I've been studying that for the past couple of years.
Excellent.
A couple questions I have is, do you believe that some of the myths that have been embedded in our psyche have to be dissolved first for us to evolve? Such as the belief that we need, you know, government in order to survive, or we need an oppressive monetary system to survive, and that...
You think we should have anarchy?
No, not anarchy, but we... see, not having a government does not necessarily mean anarchy.
Do you think that guys like you and I would just go out and fix the highway if it was up to us, whether it got done or not?
No, but what I'm saying as far as government, as far as nations, because we haven't, I don't think down through history they've been doing a very good job. If we look down through it, most nations rise to power and they want to rise to absolute power. And once they get to absolute power, then it seems that they fall. The Babylonians, the Assyrians, the Romans, and then who's next on the list to do that? So I think that pattern, maybe we should look at how governments do things.
I'm with you. I mean, I'm hearing where you're coming from, mm-hmm. and all I'm trying to say is that although you're probably 80% right, mm-hmm. if we throw out that other 20%, then these forces actually don't want to do government. They want to basically just take the money and exact power. But true government, what that really means is there's two things. There's democracy and there's the republic. The republic means that the comfort is there, and the democracy means that everybody's voice is heard. So republic is for needs being met. Democracy is for voices being heard. So government is basically a structure that allows people to try to unify together to get the basic necessities done for society. Now, with the things I'm talking about with these new sciences and so forth, similar to what Redfield wrote in the Celestine Prophecy, in the future, we can expect that a lot more of these things will be automated and will be done very well, especially if you have anti-gravity craft and that kind of thing. So I really don't think government is going to play that much of a role anymore. I really do think that when society evolves as a whole, that the intrinsic compassion of each person will become its own determinant of their behavior. So, yeah, I mean, right now, there's no point in getting upset about government. You know, if you want to change it, then get in there and change it. Make a vote, you know, make a difference if you can. But basically, the real challenge right now is not to try to focus on the conspiracies and stuff. It's to focus on your inner work and what you can do to help yourself evolve, regardless of who's in power, how tyrannical various governments might be, et cetera. But Lamar, I really want to thank you for that call. It's a great question.
David, do you do general predictions as well? For example, I mean, will we ever send men to Mars? Are we going to get hit by an asteroid? Do you ever look at things like that?
The source I work with would probably see those questions as a little too unimportant because they don't directly relate to something that would matter in 10,000 years as much as it does today. Because what we're really looking for is evolution of mind, body, and spirit questions.
All right. Let's go west of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi.
Hi. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Orlando, Florida.
Orlando. And what's your name?
My name's Missy.
Hi, Missy. Go ahead.
Oh, George, I just love you so much. I love listening to your voice, sir. You're so open-minded and gentle. I had to talk with you both.
Jordan rocks. Let's face it. He rocks.
Awesome. Thank you for taking my call. I'm very, very, very enthused about what you're talking about tonight, David, because when you were reading off the checklist, the Wanderer checklist to George, I was just kind of following it along with it myself.
Bing, 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 huh?
Yeah, all of them. I don't think there's one that I don't fit.
And see, you're an alien too, Missy, huh?
Yes, sir. Maybe so. But it all made sense to me, so I was like, oh, well, that explains a lot, you know?
Yeah, you volunteered to be here and do this.
Yes, and
so,
when you said that,
thank you
for
your service.
It meant so much to me when you said that. I was like, oh, my gosh. It's like, that makes sense. And it was really neat, too, because you also said, why do you listen to this show every night? And I'm like, my main priority was, other than when the hurricane was coming through, other than staying alive, was getting a radio so I could listen to the Coast to Coast show.
Well, call up the Sea Crane Company. They got a good one.
That's good. My question is, what do I do now?
What do you do?
What should I do?
Well,
is that what I
okay,
do?
Here's the deal. Here's the deal. If you've awakened to the fact that you might be an extraterrestrial soul and that you're here on a volunteer mission of service, the next step is to figure out what's most important. The Law of One series said, if you can reach one person, you reach everyone. Who do you think, Missy, is the most important person you need to reach?
I have two answers for that.
Yourself?
That's one of them.
That's
yeah.
the right one.
Is it? Okay, I was thinking the other one is just my students, because I teach, and I love teaching them. But myself was the first one.
Reaching out to yourself is important. The highest goal of any wanderer on this planet is simply this: to radiate the realization of oneness with the Creator.
Oh, wow.
It's improvisational. It's like playing jazz. It changes. Somebody will be hurt in the street, you go and help them.
Yeah.
Somebody needs a shoulder to cry on, you help them. You go to the checkout counter at the grocery store, you smile at the person, it's the first person to smile at them all day.
Always.
Little things all over the place. That's what makes the difference.
Oh,
but Missy, thank you so much for your call. I love your enthusiasm. It's great talking with you.
I'll be at your website. Thank you, folks, so much.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you, dear. Now let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hello.
Yeah, where are you calling from?
My name's Jason. I'm from Lindsberg, Kansas.
Sure, Jason.
Hey, Jason. Welcome. You on KSAL.
Yep.
Good to talk to you, George and David. I had a question about, unfortunately, you can't count a finite amount of, or infinite number of things in a finite amount of time, so I just have one question for you.
All right,
well,
thank
hit
you.
It off. Let's go for it.
I had an experience a couple, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, where I was walking down a country road with my friends out here in Kansas, and I was looking up at the Pleiades constellation, and I've always felt like I was the wanderer that you've been speaking of on this show.
Good. Good.
And blah, blah, blah. I don't have a question about it. But
you're volunteering to do this mission.
Yes. I feel like I'm even going to come back again. But anyway.
Wow. Okay. So you have this experience out on the roads in Kansas with your friends.
Correct.
What happened?
I'm looking at the Pleiades constellation, and I see a lucid vision of a leaf, okay, over a bed of water. The bed of water is in, like, almost a crystalline structure. It's, like,
diamond-shaped. Got it.
And the leaf is, the spine of the leaf is very curly, that the edges are really jagged, and it was so loose that it was like I could have reached out and touched it. And I was wondering what significance that might have. And ever since then, I've really felt connected with that constellation.
Okay. Basically, that probably is telling you that that's where you came from, because the leaf is something that comes from it's the fruit of a living thing. And water in dreams generally means the world of spirit. So what it's saying is, it's like you're the leaf that fell from the Pleiades and landed in the water of spirit to take on a human form. That's probably a symbolic way of telling you that you're a Pleiadian. That would be my guess.
Interesting. Okay, thanks for that phone call, Jason. I appreciate you being on Coast to Coast. Next up is the clock. Oh, my gosh, where'd the time go? Wildcard line, you're on with us. Hi there.
Hey, how you doing?
We're great. Where'd you call? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Vancouver, British Columbia.
Sure thing.
And your name?
On
1410. Sorry.
And
your
name? And you are?
My name is Robert.
Okay, Robert. Go ahead.
Right, what's your question?
Hey, listen, you know that period of 8.67 years that you were talking about earlier with the cross circle?
That's correct.
That just happens to be the equivalent in days of the square root of 10 million days. Is that how you got that?
No, it's actually 1/6 of 52. But that's very interesting that it would also be that at the same time. Very interesting.
Yeah, I got a lot more numbers for you, but we don't have time. Anyways, I was just curious how you got that.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the question. I think we can hit off another one here, George.
First time caller line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi there, George. Hi, David. It's Nita in Jacksonville.
Hi, Nita.
Hey, Nita. How's it going? Nice to hear
from
you. Good.
Something. Yeah. I just really wanted to call and say, George, I am a first-time listener as well.
Well, great. I'm glad you're with us.
Yeah. It's
I know Nita pretty well, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I wanted to call and say is I had a reading with David about a year ago. I have the book. I've ordered the CD, and David and I have a reading this weekend, kind of like a yearly tune-up or whatever. And
do you think he's Edgar Casey, Nita?
Yes, I do. David has some really interesting information in my reading, and I, too, am a wanderer, but I kind of found it in a similar way, but I found it more about physical characteristics than thoughts and feelings. It was kind of a fluke how I found out about it, because I was just on the Internet, and I have known for a long time that I have an extra vertebrae in my back.
Right, I remember this, yeah.
And I Googled extra vertebrae, and the ET quiz came up in addition to umpteen medical websites.
Really?
And I started reading about that.
That's weird.
Brad Steiger has a book called Star People where it talks about the fact that this extra vertebrae is a symbol of the ET soul. It's one of the things that the ET DNA does to the human DNA when the person tries to push into a physical body. And Nita is definitely an extraterrestrial soul. I do remember your story.
Yeah, so it was been really interesting, but like I said...
And you felt the reading was useful, that it gave you something that was valuable.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, good.
We have a lot to talk about and when I talked to you on Sunday, but I'm really intrigued by what you said about the hurricane, because I'm here in Jacksonville, and it's a thing I do. I never work on Friday the 13th, and Jacksonville was directly in line for that hurricane if it hit Tampa. And I was kind of doing the Reiki on the hurricane, too, and just kind of hoping for the best possible outcome. And we barely got rain where I live.
Excellent. Well, congratulations. Let's talk again on Sunday. I think we might be able to get one more caller in. So
nope.
We'll chat soon.
We will not get any more calls in. The clock is here. We only got about a minute left. Ascension 2000. Very quickly, you said you have a cruise coming up?
Yeah, I have a cruise to the Caribbean in October, and I have a trip to Egypt in April.
Egypt?
Yeah, we're going to do the Great Pyramid. We're going to do all kinds of great stuff. Half of it is a cruise on the Nile, and I'm really looking forward to that. It will be the first time I've probably seen it in 2,000 years.
That's right, when you're not raw, right?
Yeah, so this this Caribbean, we're going to be trying to work on the wounds in the Earth's energy field that were created from the fall of Atlantis. It's going to be full multimedia. I'll be talking and lecturing. It's also a gorgeous 5-star luxury cruise. So basically you pay the one price, and then you don't have to worry about any other expenses. You just get to have fun and vacation and hang out with me for 8 days. And
you should be paying us to do that.
Hey, if you want to come on one of these, George, I'll see if I can work it out.
I'm not going to be able to get away, but I will see you. I will see you next weekend at the Expo conference.
And I hope we can see some of your listeners there too. It's going to be fun to meet you, George.
There'll be a lot of people out there, David. Thanks a lot.
All right, man.
For David Wilcox, thank you so much again. Steve Carr, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, webmaster, Sean LaDesour, who works with Lex, Barbara Simpson, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, everyone, be safe.